Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. This Saturday, the Keepers of the Canton Native Asylum Story host their annual ceremony at the Hiawatha Indian Insane Asylum to honor those buried in its cemetery. The secretary for the Keepers, Ann Dillon Schneider, is with us now from Sioux Falls. Ann, welcome.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by Canton historian Joyce Miles. She's leading a group that's putting together a book on the 150th anniversary of the Native Asylum. Joyce, welcome, and from Canton.
Thank you.
And let's start with, give me an overview of who the Keepers of the Story are and a little bit of history there.
Well, the Keepers came together in 2012. It was Michelle Anderson and Donna Dexter. They had learned the story of the asylum, and then as they started digging into it, the story unfolded. They learned that an honoring had been going on since like about 1988. Harold Ironshield from University of South Dakota had discovered the history and had been leading an honoring. So they were interested in that. They were interested in who was sent there and discovered, started discovering it as we've continued to work. We literally learn new things every week. That the asylum was the linchpin of federal Indian policy from 1902 to 1933. And about at least 400 Native Americans were sent there from all over the U.S. If you were bad in boarding school, you would be sent there. If a reservation agent was angry with you, you could be sent there. One woman was sent because she had several children in several years. She was sent because she had no self-control. So the reasons were a little spurious. There were infants there. And the asylum was closed and the main buildings were razed. There are a few buildings still standing, but the cemetery's out between the fourth and fifth fairways of the Hiawatha Golf Club. And the golf course team has been incredible about honoring that space as a sacred space. And so there's 121 buried there. More died than that. But many were able to be sent back home. But there's several infants and then another 120 plus in unmarked graves, and that's where we meet from 53 tribes around the country. So people will come this weekend from all over the United States to honor the people there. And as John Eagle pointed out last year, one of the elders, that maybe these people did not die in vain. It was a terrible, terrible place. They were chained to the beds and left to die. But they are bringing people together who are Native and not Native, and maybe that healing is the purpose for them being there.
So, Anne, when we talk about, what do we call this now? Keepers of the Canton Native Asylum, Hiawatha Indian Insane Asylum, is that the original name? And how important is what we call this place today? How does that matter?
So it was originally the Canton Indian Insane Asylum, and at some point the name changed to the Hiawatha Indian Insane Asylum, and it was a big tourist attraction. You could come see the crazy Indians and buy your souvenirs and your postcards and all that. It was right across from the ski. There was a huge ski jump that was where the Olympic trials were held in Canton. So Canton was quite the center of information. But when we came to coming up with a name for the Keepers, and the Keepers is a Native and non-Native group, we're really focused on a lot of education and reconciliation, because there's a lot of heroic stories by the Canton residents who lost their jobs in the Depression and the Dust Bowl, getting this complaining to shut this place down, by Native families that complain. That story is its own wonderful story. But because very, very few, if anyone, was insane among the inmates who were there, and they called them inmates, we decided to call it just the Keepers of the Canton Native Asylum Story and not use the word insane, because no tribe had a word for that. And truly, when they did the evaluations at the closing of the asylum, very few could be qualified as that. Most had epilepsy or were there for other reasons that were political.
Joyce, I want to bring you into the conversation and talk to me a little bit about research and this notion of finding the stories and then somehow creating a book that other people can sort of access the story in one place. Give me an idea of what that process is like.
Well, a lot of our information, we've gotten a lot from the internet and stuff like that. And with creating my other book that I was doing on Canton, that's when I come across the asylum. And then ordered a couple books and found Ann's name on that. So we contacted Ann. And then she came over to the house with a big presentation that she had, about 2-hour presentation. And we've been talking ever since and passing back information back and forth there, too.
Ann, I want to talk to you a little bit about these presentations, because I know through the South Dakota Humanities Council you travel the state, I believe, with Jerry Fogg. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and how you bring the story throughout the region.
Well, Jerry Fogg's a wonderful Yankton Sioux artist who has been very involved in this, and really, you know, those of who are familiar with his art know that he puts together art in a way that makes people curious about our South Dakota heritage and history. And so he's great with the visuals and also the Native perspective, having been in a boarding school himself. And so he brings humor, wonderful sense of humor, because it's a hard story. And so we've over the years really developed a way of bringing the story to any group, any community group, any town in South Dakota, doesn't matter how big or small, we will go anywhere, thanks to the Humanities Council. And we do, it's PowerPoint, so lots of photographs, and not just information, but we want people to get the feel of the story. And so we know so much, and we've distilled it into this 2-hour presentation. We've presented it in Chamberlain, we've presented it in the penitentiary, we've gone to schools, churches, Rotary clubs. I mean, all kinds of groups have asked us to come, and we love telling that story and helping us all really understand our past and how it is we got to this point, and how we can move forward. Because this is, when we talk about restorative justice, we're really talking about what happened, what have been the implications of that, and how do we heal it moving forward. So part of sharing the story is to help us understand each other across the state. And then even in Canton, you know, for so many years, people have not wanted to talk about the story, and yet we're finding these incredible stories of heroism on the part of the staff. Mm-hmm. You know, just that we really, and that's where Joyce and that team, her team, have been wonderful in digging up records, and we're hoping to find people who can help us fill in that part. And then Carla Joynson, who you've interviewed about her book, she's learned a lot about Native family side and some other issues, because she spent 5 years in the National Archives getting material that she shared with us. And then, like Sanford Hospital, the health system there, their hospital in Canton is on the hospital site. And they've been wonderful in creating a healing fountain with the elders using the foundation stones that have been found in Canton. And when they build the multi-purpose building that's planned out there, there's going to be a whole section about the asylum, so that we're not hiding the history. We're sharing the courage and the politics, the financial side of the decision. How did we get there? And then how, in a good way, do we move forward and say, we don't want this to happen to anyone else again?
And can you tell me an individual story of heroism or courage from a staff member or a community member that sort of gives us the details of what kinds of things people were doing?
Well, one of the things that we learned, and really, not having been a child in the Dust Bowl, I'm a little younger than that, but really finding out that we started hearing that staff people who complained were promptly fired. Okay, that's one thing. But then to look at the context, to realize that during the Dust Bowl, South Dakota had a higher percentage of people on relief than any state in the country, even in Oklahoma. And the photographs from that time, hear about what happened to South Dakota during the Depression, to get that context of what it meant just to be willing to give up your job in the middle of that kind of ruin for the sake of people that other people had just put away. And so we know that, like, the first nurses that were hired 25 years, and there were no nurses for 25 years. They finally hired one, and the minute she piped up, she was promptly fired, as were two other wonderful staff people. And Manfred Hill, who's our eyewitness who's still alive, has told us about the two young men that were fired and said, you know, those two men, and I don't have their names on the tip of my tongue, but they were fine, upstanding young men from Canton. And they backed up the nurses, and they were promptly fired. And then the nurses were actually, reputations were ruined by the powers that be in that effort to get them out. Another was Dr. Turner, who was the first doctor and pretty much the only one. There was another doctor for only a few months. He was there right at the beginning, and it was hoped that he would be the second superintendent in 1908. And the powers that be didn't want him to be the doctor. So after he was fired, one of the things that fired or resigned, that's a little bit unclear. One of the things that Joyce and her team discovered that we didn't know is that he continued on as a doctor in Canton. And he's actually, they found his grave, which we didn't know about. But he stayed and continued to serve people there, even though his federal career was destroyed. He okay. went on and served there. So we have, you know, we want to find the people, families of the people that work there, because we want to find out, well, why did your family member risk their job? Why did they give that up? And would we have the courage to do that ourselves? So there's that side. Then you have Native friendships that also helped close the asylum, where friendships were formed that also made a huge difference, where a few letters and friendships actually tilted the balance on the whole story. And so there's that, too. So each of these people made a huge contribution to where we are now.
Joyce, do you have a sense, like Anne said, that there's been a hesitation in Canton to really talk about it? Or are you seeing, moving forward, that there's a thirst to put that story together and to gather more photographs and interviews and memories of the place?
I think there's a little more hesitation on it. Mm-hmm. Few people I have talked to and stuff, they really didn't want to discuss it that much. And mm-hmm. there's other people that did, but there's more that are more hesitant.
What's the value of overcoming that sense of sort of shame?
I don't know.
Anne, what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, all stories are complicated, and there's many points of view, and I think beginning to see it as we have opportunities for courage before us every day. And to know that, you know, so-and-so's family here in Canton, they were part of getting this closed. They had the courage to speak up. You know, that might give me the courage sometime at my job or someplace I'm at when I need to speak up, that I might have the courage to do that too, because it was the right thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we always need heroes and sheroes. And we've got some unsung people. And in this particular story, there are Native American heroes and sheroes, and there are Canton residents who spoke up. And we need both sides of the story, and it's been kind of hidden. The city of Canton actually has recognized us as an official group so that we can communicate, you know, from city council to tribal council at appropriate levels and with respectful levels, because we're dealing with the tribal preservation officers. And, right. and then they send, you know, delegations to the honoring, so that there's a sense of wanting to move forward. And it's slow. I mean, as Joyce says, there's hesitancy. People have been concerned about implications of the story, and yet there's so much heroism and beauty in the story as well as difficulty.
Anne, how did you come to this story? Why is it so important to you? Where did you first enter this story and become so committed to it?
I was invited in 2012 when it began. I had been worked with the Diné, with the Navajo, a couple decades ago as an internship, and had begun to hear about the boarding schools at that point. And then when I moved to South Dakota, that's a whole long story in itself. People knew that I had done a lot of my research in restorative justice and how do we move into the future, and the difference
between just saying I'm sorry and really doing a process of forgiveness, which really involves how do we move forward? This whole sense of not staying back, but how do we honor and move to next step?
Right.
And so then I got invited into that then.
And you mentioned the word healing earlier, and I was thinking at the time, how is that even possible? So when you take a story like this, and as you said, it's mm-hmm. a complicated story, but it's also a very grim story. Mm-hmm. How do you take something that's this egregious and sort of think about healing?
Well, I think couple of things come into play. One is the wonderful Native tradition of that we're all related. And so this is a story we own together. So we own the sadness and the grimness, and we own the courage of the people who were there, who wrote letters. We have letters written in Lakota. We have letters written in English from inside describing and saying, help us get out. And we have family members who helped. And, of course, we have the staff. We have people in Washington who did listen. And so it's trying to deal with, like, with every story. Where's the sadness, but where's the courage? Where do we honor the goodness of the human spirit? And then again, as John Eagle said, and who is not to say this happened so that we would all come together, tell the stories, and be stronger together now in 2017?
Let's close, Anne, with the details of the honoring ceremony. Who's invited? Who's there? What's the process like? What can you tell me about the ceremony itself?
Well, everyone's invited. It's free. Please come. Rain or shine. We've had rain sometimes, other times not. We're going to gather at 2 o'clock on the west of town at the intersection of Highway 18 and Highway 11, and the Sacred Horse Society will be leading us through town out east to where the Hiawatha Golf Club is. And then we'll be meeting probably 3-ish there, so people can also join us there. There will be parking up by the 4-H grounds, and for elders, there will be golf carts, because there is a bit of a walk out to the cemetery. And we gather out at the cemetery, and the elders who are ready, when they're ready, will lead us in just a time of honoring. There are so many traditions with 53 tribes represented that we don't want to just do what one group would have done, so we trust the elders who come from a number of traditions to come together and lead us. And there'll be drums and just gathering of people, usually 200-300 people, maybe more. And then we eat and tell stories. So there's a great potluck, and we send people home with food because there's always too much, like every good party.
All right. That's Saturday, July 29th, correct, Anne?
Right. Out there, rain or shine.
On Facebook. You have a Facebook page. That would be where people would find more details?
Right. There's more details there and a little bit more about the history. And like you brought up earlier, South Dakota Humanities Council will help any group in the state bring us.
All right. Anne Dillon Schneider, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your work. We appreciate your time.
And we thank Joyce and her crew because they are finding things we never would have found. So we're looking forward to the rest of the year really doing some digging into the history.
Joyce Miles, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate all you do.
Thank you.